Hi, this is Chris, host of A Couple of Drips. Just before we start, I wanted to say a quick word about our subscribers' memberships. If you'd like to help support future episodes, you can subscribe to the show for a few pounds a month. This'll help fund production, coffee, and guest expenses. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. Cheers, and enjoy the show.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Settle in and turn it up. It's time for A Couple of Drips. Coffee, conversation, and occasional quips. Here's your host, Chris Granger.
Hello, and welcome to another installment of A Couple of Drips. Thanks for tuning in, if you are. And if you're not, who am I talking to? My guest today is a local chap. Well, not really a local chap.
Not originally.
Not originally.
Very local now.
He's a chap who lives locally. That's what I'm going to say. Please welcome Leo Caponaros.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, Leo, I said you're living locally now, but you're not from here originally. I'm detecting a slight London twinge there. So tell us where you're originally from.
I'm originally from a town called Gravesend in Kent.
Ah, Gravesend, yeah.
Do you know it?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's famous for being the burial place of Pocahontas. So someone died there, essentially.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's a big statue of Pocahontas on the River Thames. It's an interesting place to have been born and raised.
Yeah, I had a friend at university from Gravesend, so that's how I've heard of it, because I actually knew someone from there. So,
okay, yeah. I apologise in advance for whatever they did or said.
No, they were perfectly charming, okay. Perfectly charming.
Good.
But yeah, great. So when did you move to Stone? How did that happen? Where else have you lived?
Oh, yeah. So I was born and raised in Gravesend. I went to uni in Manchester. And this is where we get into a succession of various jobs and relationships that have led me to living in Stone. I don't know how long have you got,
we've
Chris?
We've all been there.
But I first moved to Yarnfield, a little village just up the road, in 2005.
Nice.
Whilst living there, the girlfriend I had at the time, a friend of hers from work, was a member of Stone Revellers.
Oh, okay.
And I went down to see one of their shows because of that kind of little link.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was balmy and right up my street, and I ended up getting involved.
Great.
And even though that sort of...
That's the local theatre group for anyone listening.
Local theatre company. They've been operating in town since 1978.
Yeah.
But I went to see them in 2005 and just, yeah, ended up getting involved.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, an amazing place. And it's the reason I live here. That group of people made Stone.
That's really nice.
Well,
that's
it is. Really nice. I'm getting soft already. But yeah, it was that group of people. And they're a weird mix of people from all different, you know, different backgrounds and different professions. And it's a kind of random bunch of people that are thrown together for a shared kind of interest in something.
Brilliant. I think that's a good reason for moving here. I mean, one of the reasons I moved here was back in 2007 was the fact that my band was playing in Granville's a lot, and all the travelling I was doing, it was easier for me to live here than keep going backwards and forwards kind of thing, because I was working at Stafford at the time. Mm. Well, I was here most evenings, and then I was living over towards Telford, so it was a big trek. So it made it much easier. We're going to talk a lot today about the thing that you're heavily involved with, which is Crown Wharf. Mm. We'll come on to that in a little bit, but we'll just have a look at the coffee first.
Okay.
All together now.
1, 2, 3, 4. Coffee time, it's coffee time. It doesn't matter if it's your place or mine. Coffee, they call the wine of therapy. Brew the wine, it's better than tea.
I can can only apologise for that eye dent, as I as I often do. It was a funny day that day. So
it smacks of having too much coffee.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. That's what I was going for. So what are we drinking, Leo?
We are drinking, has been, El Salvador edition, 22.044.
Oh. I love it when a coffee has a number. It makes it so memorable.
Yeah, it does. It's like Captain's Log.
Yeah.
The farm is La Divina Providencia.
Oh, very good.
The process was anaerobic and natural. Mm. And the variety is Red Bourbon.
Very nice.
Do you want the description?
Yes, go on. Give us the highlights of the description.
Okay, it does feel a little bit Nigella Lawson reading this, so I'll go for it.
Go for it. Oh, please do.
Think of plum crumble with all those soft plums covered in brown sugar in this funky, fruity cup. How's that?
That was very good. Voiceover job for you straight away.
Thank you.
Brilliant. So have you got any left, or have you drunk it all?
Oh, no, I've got some.
Just give it a slurp. So tell me what you
can taste. You want slurping sound effects?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. What do you think?
It's delicious. It's very
good. Well, I like that. Yeah,
it's
good. I made it in a Chemex this morning, by the way.
Yeah, it was. I watched the process. I refer to it as a scientific process.
Funnily enough, the Chemex was invented by a German scientist who moved to America, couldn't get a decent cup of coffee, and he was working in the lab, and he thought, if I could make a vessel the right shape from borosilicate, I could get a much better cup of coffee out of it, and then went through about 200 prototypes.
So, and that's how this was. This is like
this is.
It's amazing. The taste goes on for ages as well.
It does, doesn't it? It's quite winey, isn't it? It's quite fruity, almost fermented.
Yeah, it's got a lot of that. And
the description of plum crumble is interesting.
Yeah,
on the packet
there is more. I didn't mention the butterscotch aftertaste.
Butterscotch aftertaste.
There's a bit of nutmeg lingering in there as well. Apparently,
I do wonder with some of these descriptions.
Yeah.
These descriptions, weren't they? These guys must have ridiculously tuned taste buds, but
it's like the whole Gilly Gordon thing, isn't it?
Getting
wheatgrass.
I'm getting plums. I'm getting on everyone's nerves.
Yeah, getting 30 quid an hour for this nonsense.
Exactly. But it's very nice. Has been is
delicious.
Roasters in Stafford.
Yep.
And I have to give them a quick shout out, actually, because I did a charity fundraiser for Compton Hospice a couple of weeks ago, and they sent me loads of coffee for that. So thanks to them for all the coffee. I did actually record people's tasting notes while they were doing that, so that'll be going out as a bonus thing on a later episode. So keep your eyes out for that. But that's brilliant. So moving on from the coffee then to, I mentioned Crown Wharf and the Revelers. Mm. Do you like to tell us a little bit about what Crown Wharf is for anyone who doesn't know, and a little bit of the history of the project?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, Crown Wharf Theatre is an opportunity that has presented itself to, I guess, the whole town, really. And I just found myself in the middle of it. And I'll probably tell the story as to how that happened. But essentially, we're building a new theatre, event space, cinema space in the middle of Stone. And it's attached to the Crown Wharf pub, which is a relatively new pub that opened probably just over a year ago. And it's just this thing that's grown and developed and exploded in our hands. And we're kind of trying to keep up with it and make sure that we capitalize on an opportunity for the benefit of as many people in the town, as many creatives in the town, and people that just want to come and see some stuff as possible. But where it started, I suppose, is the best place to start.
Yeah, please.
Is that I, as I said, got involved with Revelers very casually to begin with in 2005. The reason I was moved here was this relationship that went awry, as they often do. But I was involved with Revelers by that point. I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I love this bunch of people. I'd made some very close friends very quickly.
Absolutely.
And then after about 9 years later, I found myself as chair of Stone Revelers, like right involved with a mix of the committee and keeping it going and trying to, just keep the society strong and vibrant, new members, inviting new members, but nurturing the existing membership and all of that stuff that keeps a kind of society like that vibrant. And Revelers has done a great job, particularly through COVID as well. Post me and all the other chairs that have come in since have really kind of sticking to principles but keep moving forward, if you know what I mean. And I really love the society for that.
Just to interrupt you, that, what did you do through COVID? Did you still talk to each other on Zoom calls?
And
did you manage to
the fundamental purpose of what that whole community was about was curtailed. You couldn't do shows in a tiny room and get 100 people in a tiny, unventilated room. So that all stopped, and you kind of worry, well, do we exist at all then if we're not doing the thing that we regularly meet for? But there were, you know, we did the kind of quizzes and all that kind of stuff to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I guess really not a lot happened other than kind of mutual support and keeping an eye on each other and casually getting together when we could.
Yeah.
But I guess the strength of Stone Revelers and what it meant to people really bear true just after COVID, because they had a kind of reunion event when we were allowed, when the pub opened in Crown Wharf.
Yeah.
And I guess about 90 people showed up, which is quite a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was people that hadn't been involved for years, but they just wanted to come back and reconnect with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could talk a little bit about the new theatre space and all of that. But just all these people showed up, and it was kind of like it all flooded back in.
Yeah.
And then we've picked up doing shows again, and the show, you know, we've done a couple of shows post COVID now.
Yeah.
They've sold out.
But I think you can't underplay just during lockdown having that connection with people, having that support, and just saying to people, you might be on your own, but you're not, or you might be isolated, but you're not on your own kind of thing.
Absolutely.
You know, we're still here. This is going to happen. This is something to look forward to after lockdown, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel for people, you know.
It's funny, you know, as well. It makes me think of the theatre project as well and Revelers, is that the fear at one point during it is because, you know, all our focus was on about COVID and healthcare and people's well-being and real fundamental stuff.
Mm.
And actually, you know, is the arts and all of that just a little bit of a kind of frolicky, fluffy thing that isn't as important to people at the moment? But what we realised actually was the appetite to come back and connect with people, to be entertained or be part of. And I'm sure musicians felt this, I'm sure, you know, just the appetite to do that again, connect with people and perform for people or go to a gig or go to a show was massive.
Yeah.
And actually the appetite for our project, we were worried that Crown Wharf Theatre might feel like an excess when we're thinking about funding healthcare and social care and all that stuff. And people are going to be interested in building a new theatre. And actually more than ever, that flooded back in, that interest in having a place to come back and mix with people and tell stories or... play music or watch a film, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think when you're saying, you know, obviously it would seem quite low down the list when you think about it initially, but then once you start thinking about mental health and well-being, you know, having that connection with people, having that thing to do, having that thing to be involved with that's not just surviving, that's not an essential, that's actually fun. Having that to look forward to and having that to go to, you know, from a mental health perspective, certainly. I mean, we've done a couple of mental health specials and they're coming out later in the year for a World Mental Health Day. But I mean, just having that to look forward to and having that thing to hang on that isn't just surviving, that isn't just living, that isn't just the thing that you've got to get through.
It's a bit that hierarchy of needs thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And without going too deep and meaningful, but... You heard of an actor called Mark Rylance?
Yes.
Pretty big deal. Like he's been in a lot of famous films.
He's in Dunkirk and that one about the spies, Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies, exactly. Yeah. He's the BFG voice, obviously. He played a guy called Rooster Byron in the West End production of Jerusalem. And I was watching an interview with him and he was talking about that show and why it was such a sensation and why people were queuing around the block in the West End to try and get tickets for it. And it's on again now, actually. They've kind of revived it. It's an amazing piece. And we've done it at Revelers, and I won't bang on about it too much. But there was an interview with him, and he said that the reason that people crave this kind of storytelling thing is that we have done for thousands of years, and he called it the logos and the mythos. So once you've done the logical stuff, which is feed yourself, build a fire, make sure that you're not going to get killed tonight, then people start looking up and wondering about the stars and telling stories and all your myths are born and all of that kind of stuff. And we've always needed it.
Yeah.
And I think during lockdown, we were actually reminded, not that it wasn't important, but how important it was that we could come together and tell stories.
All our knowledge of history before it was written down, it was all through storytelling. So storytelling has always been there and always been a very important part of society, you know.
Yeah.
But to go back to
Oh, yeah.
The project now. No, I mean, that's lovely. I love the little sides. To go back to the project, how did it start? What were the first seeds sown? Because if I have to say, if you've not walked down the canal in stone and seen the building, it is an incredible sight to see.
Yeah. So I'll tell you how it happened. Like I said, I'd got to the point as chair of Revelers. I'd been chair of Revelers for 3 years, and it was becoming apparent. We currently operate out of St. Michael's Hall, which is a shared community space. It's essentially a village hall for anyone, you know, a classic British village hall. And we'd been operating in there for quite some time. Revelers has moved from different venues around Stone over the years since 78, but operating in St. Michael's Hall for quite some time. But it became apparent it wasn't an indefinite thing, just in terms of the building and, you know, some of the requirements in terms of the amount of lights that we hang and this kind of the difficulties in sound and some of the difficulties in kind of audience comfort. It gets quite warm in there in the summer and all that sorts of things. And we won't be there forever. And that was kind of generally accepted. And so myself and my now wife, who I met through Stone Revelers, just like the site that's given me everything. and it has. It's no exaggeration. Yeah. It's given me my whole life, really, which is pretty incredible. But we decided just to start having a look around what was available in Stone. If we were going to try and pull together a new studio theatre, what spaces were available, be that old buildings or spare bits of land and stuff like that, and considerations of location, the building requirements. And initially, being totally honest, Harry, my wife, and I thought, well, if we could find a space and pull together the money, maybe we'd do it independently, stick a cafe bar on it, and maybe that would be our life. And so we started poking about and sending the odd email.
That's the dream, isn't it? The cafe and entertainment venue, or the bar and entertainment venue.
And we talk very seriously, like, this is never going to make us rich, but it might be a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, doing something we're passionate about.
Yeah.
Running any kind of cafe, bar, anything is massively hard work, never mind if there's a theatre tacked onto it.
Yeah.
So I don't think we were under any illusions, but we thought we might be able to scratch a life out and do something we both love.
Yeah.
And so we're sending emails about bits and pieces, and there was an old fire station on Crown Street.
Yeah.
Been boarded up forever. Yeah. It's a bit of a junkyard. And so we sent an email about that to the town councillors, the ones we could find on the internet, the independent ones. And interestingly, the same week we sent an inquiry about that, Joel's Brewery, and we could do a history lesson on that as well if you think it's necessary, but they're a brewery born in Stone in the 1700s. In 1970s, it got bought out by Bass and Mothballed. It was a massive loss to the town. Yeah, it was a massive loss to Stone. So the employment and the kind of pride in brewing history in Stone, it just went.
Because if you walk down the canal, the old... brewery,
bottling plant.
Wally's there. Yeah. It's now a plastics factory, I think.
Yeah, that's right. But the warehousing and everything's still there.
Beautiful logo on there.
The logos are beautiful. It's got these great finials on pitched roofs, and it's just fascinating architecture. And obviously, the new pub echoes all of that. Even borrowed one of the original finials, got it cast, and put it on top of all the roofs of the new building and stuff like that. And if you go down the high street, there's Joel's Brewery and the brickwork, and where they own different buildings around the town. But yeah, that basically got mothballed in the 70s, left the town, a big, big sad loss, and Joel's Beer was no more.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, a guy that worked for Bass was leaving Bass, and he said, I'd like to buy the brand. And I don't know the financials, but he bought the brand and he set it up again, but he couldn't start brewing in Stone, couldn't find anywhere, so he started brewing in Shropshire, Market Drayton.
Market Drayton,
That's right. And then by...
Near the Muller factory.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then now they've got their sort of 60 pubs. They're quite a big outfit, and they wanted to come back to Stone.
Yeah.
And Crown Wharf was the first pub they ever built. But basically, they sent emails to the town council at the same time saying, we're interested in that patch of land there.
Yeah.
And to their credit, the councillor said, well, we've had these two emails all at once about this thing. Why don't we put you in a room together?
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay. Yeah. And then we went to a meeting. This is Harry and I. With town councillors were there, representatives from Joel's Brewery were there, the chief exec or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they just said, we'll build you a theatre. We'll build you the shell of a theatre. Yeah. You'd have to fit it out.
Yeah.
We'd keep all the beer money, but you could have it for nothing, essentially. And you kind of walk out sort of dizzy.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
The serendipity of those emails landing at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, there's the adage of the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And we had been making a few inquiries, but that's beyond any of our wildest expectations. But what we quickly realised, Harry and myself, is that puts our little idea completely out.
Yeah.
And actually, the space that they're willing to build us is much bigger and more elaborate than we were imagining.
Yeah.
And it becomes bigger than us. It becomes bigger than Stone Revelers.
Yeah.
It becomes an opportunity for the town. So we needed to set up a whole new organisation, a brand new charity, and we can get into all of that. So it started to happen by itself at that point.
And I think that's an important thing to emphasise, is it is completely independent. It's not council run. It's not...
It's a remarkable punt, really, that Joel's took on some people they didn't know, who sort of walked into a meeting and they've just assumed that us being born out of Revelers, the local kind of volunteer base and expertise and all of that, that we could bring, that we'd get this done. But none of us had ever built a theatre before. So it was a big punt for them to take on us. Mm. And we just had to take it one step at a time, really. But yeah, you're absolutely right. This whole project now, and we're now 5 years on from that meeting.
Mm.
And this whole project now, it's local people involved. It's only people in Stone who've got together with a different set of skills and bringing different things to the table that are making this happen. And we've taken it a long way.
Yeah.
And we're nearly there. And for a long time, it was a question of, are we going to get this done?
Yeah.
And now the question is, when are we going to get it done? And we're really proud of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, sure. So the brewery have paid for the building, basically.
Exactly. They built a shell, and it was really only a shell. So there's the auditorium, which is really interesting. New build construction.
Yeah.
It's in steel, but it's got a kind of octagonal shape with exposed steel and ply wood ceiling finish, and it's got a really kind of theatrical feel about it anyway. And then it adjoins the original buildings that are on the site, which are called the Wharfingers Cottages, which were very tumble down. They were literally had trees growing in them and stuff, and they've been refurbed, but they've become our back of house areas.
Right.
So you've got this nice mix of old and new.
Yeah.
But that, again, you're talking brick walls, concrete floor.
Yeah.
No services, no nothing. So it's literally a shell.
Yeah.
And we've got to turn that into dressing rooms, toilets, facilities, changing facilities, disabled changing facilities, green room.
Workshops for making props.
Workshops, presumably. Exactly. Yeah. And then the theatre itself, we've got to go literally, we've got to put in a floor, we've got to put in the walls, we've got to put in all the electrical infrastructure, data infrastructure, sound infrastructure.
Yeah.
We've got to put in balcony seating, we've got to put in internal walls, we've got to put in all the seating, lighting grids, lights, sound equipment, technical box, heating, ventilation, air conditioning.
So how far would you say you are from it? Because obviously the pub is now up and running and functioning and making money.
Yeah.
And the kitchens are open, and so they're doing food as well now. Mm. And it's a big area.
Massive, yeah.
How far is the theatre from completion, do you think?
We had ambitions to be operational this year, and they seemed reasonable. We're a bit less optimistic on that now, just because the heating ventilation requirements are more significant than we'd anticipated. We're not construction experts. We're not project management experts. So we're kind of finding stuff out as we go along.
Yeah.
We've saved hundreds of thousands of pounds in not paying for lots of clever designers and project managers and all of that, and self-managing the project. But within that comes loads of mistakes and stupid errors and things that we're learning along the way. And that's kind of, we're just accepting that and retro doing some stuff and all of that. But that was the only way we're going to get this done. But the heating and ventilation requirement is quite significant, because particularly post-COVID, if you put 200 people in a room, you have to make sure the rate of change in the air, like, I'm going to get into the details of this because people will fall asleep, but you have to change the air quite regularly so lots of people don't get COVID all at once or any other nasty bug, which makes a lot of sense. But that's far more significant job than we were anticipating.
Yeah.
So we think that puts us to spring 23. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
And we've got a huge program of work lined up for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So it doesn't stop us we're not stopped in our tracks. We just need to make sure we've got that absolutely right. So, you know, we know it's a safe place for people to come.
And what kind of things do you envisage being on at the theatre? Is it just going to be local productions, or are you going to have touring theatre groups in there? Are you going to have music? What sort of...
The answer is yes. We really wanted a flexible space, and we really wanted to kind of get the maximum benefit we could out of it. And that's where, I mean, it kind of just grew bigger than Revelers. And that's why what I did was... with a bunch of other people, some of which were part of Revelers and some of which were external to Revelers, is set up Cranwell Theatre is a standalone charity.
Right.
And we've raised the funding to and managed the project, and we're going to operate the building. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a member of Revelers Committee anymore because it's just too much of its own project, but I'm still involved. I've just done Revelers Show. I'm still a reveler in my heart sort of thing. Yeah. But and then, so we just realised that this space could be a massive opportunity for a lot of people to benefit. So there will be amateur theatre. We've had lots of people that want to book it already, and Revelers would obviously do its 4 shows a year in there. And what have you. We also, there's rooftop studios, and they want to put their productions there and there at the minute. Yeah. You've got local schools and gang shows and handful of songs.
Rooftop is the local dance studio.
Yeah, Dance and Theatre Academy, exactly. Yeah. And there's other dance schools, there's choral society, there's people, there's choirs and things like that that want to use it. But you know what happens at the minute is that if rooftops and all the kids that go there put on a production, they drag themselves, all the parents, aunties, uncles, grandparents, whatever, to either Stafford or Stoke. And they're brilliant facilities, and you know, we're really friendly with all these people, but it doesn't make sense for Stone that everyone has to ship up the A34 down the A34. Yeah. And it's the same for all gang shows. So there's, you know, kind of scouts and brownies and all of that stuff and guides. They're doing their and handful of songs that they ship them all up to Stoke or ship them all up to Stafford.
Yeah.
And it's just not right. it's just not right that all these people from Stone have to drag themselves and, you know, can't have a nice drink afterwards and wander home. And that's the dream.
Yeah.
So there's that. I think music's a big part of it. You know, Stone's got a vibrant music scene.
Great music scene.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's disproportionate to the size of the town, how much talent there is. And, you know, having gigs, album launches, concerts, those sorts of things. Brilliant. Being part of the local festivals as well. An undercover venue as part of the food and drink festival, the music, you know, and the music festival and stuff like that. Just to give it another dimension.
Yeah.
I think it would be important. Cinema is a really big one. People want cinema. It's great for footfall. It's great for the odd day where you haven't got the booking and all of that. Yeah. And you're in the holidays, you can program it for families. And then in the afternoon, you can put on classic films and people can have a cup of coffee, cake.
Saturday morning cinema club.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we can do those things. And we can even start to mix mixed media. You can have live performance. You know, that kind of secret cinema vibe where you show the film, but you have some live action as part of it. And
nice. Rocky Horror.
If you like, definitely. And the big one as well, I think, will be stand-up comedy. I just think we're made for stand-up comedy.
Brilliant.
And trying to capture comedians on their way up or on their way back from Edinburgh. Because you've got this vibrant pub, a good food and drink offer, and then you've got an auditorium that could see up to 218 people.
Brilliant.
And I think it will level off about 160 will be the standard, but you can blow it up or shrink it down depending on what's going on.
Great.
And so you could have stand-up comedian one day, you could have a gig in there another day, you'd have a full musical with 40 people, 50 people.
Yeah.
Or you could shrink it right down, have a play with 2 people in it and have a nice intimate audience of 100.
Great.
That's the idea.
That's very nice, very nice. Mm. And will it be, is it going to be in the round? Is it proscenium arch? Is it thrust? What kind of?
It is those things that you just described because you can change the way you use the space. It's hard to describe that. But if you imagine you've got an octagon, which is basically half full of people, that is adjoined to a square box that was that old Wharfinger's cottage building.
Right, gotcha. Yeah.
You can move the performance space right into that square box and it becomes quite prosarch traditional.
Yeah.
Or you can come right out into the octagon and lay out in slightly different ways. And it's not quite in the round, but it's a little bit more immersive.
Nice.
So you can do different things with it.
Yeah, that's really good. So it's not going to be a permanent fixed stage.
No. And what we've basically done is we've lifted all the audience above the acting space.
Yeah.
So you essentially can act on the floor. Now, some people want a stage and we'll probably have some demountable staging that we can put in there. That won't be necessarily what you have to do. There won't be the fixed stage and that's where you perform because that was never Reveller's vibe and that's not.
You planning to run like workshops and things there as well, acting workshops and things like
that? Yeah, I think that's a massive part of when we set up the charity. It's no easy thing getting charitable status, and you have to really demonstrate what your purpose is from a charitable aspect. And ours is about advancement of the education of the arts for the area.
Yeah.
And some of that can just be going to come and see a show, but some of that would be about learning from professionals, workshops. And we're really proud of, well, when I say we, I'm now talking about Stone Revelers. Over the years, we've had a number of kind of people get involved with us from a technical side, so it's lighting, sound engineering, that sort of stuff.
Great.
Go on to work professionally.
Yeah.
And we've got someone in BBC Studios doing their lighting. We've got someone who's now rigs up all the kind of power and lighting for remote film sets like Hollywood, film sets and stuff like that. He's currently doing loads of power and lighting and stuff for Glastonbury. Someone else who's toured the world, stage managing things like Warhorse, currently working on the West End with Come From Away and stuff. So we're proud of that track record, and we can do loads more of that.
Yeah.
Getting young people or older people behind a professional sound desk or rigging lights in a kind of professional level theatre. Well, we know that not only will we get actors, singers, dancers, musicians that will become household names, we know that we'll get more and more people the opportunity to work professionally in that field as well.
That's brilliant.
And
that's
we're really proud of what we've done already, and that's just working out of the Village Hall.
So it's entirely not for profit then?
Exactly. We've done a business plan for when we're operational, and at the moment that's on the basis that it's volunteer powered.
Yeah.
And I am at pains to say it, no one is making a penny out of Crown Wharf Theatre. Mm. It's attached to Crown Wharf, which is Joel's pub, and obviously that's a profit-making thing.
Yeah.
And they will profit from the fact that our audiences pile out into the pub and have a beer or a plate of fish and chips.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in terms of the theatre operations, that's Crown Wharf Theatre Charity. Everyone involved is a volunteer.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a penny in it for any of us, but there's a huge amount of satisfaction.
Absolutely.
It's a bit of a privilege to be involved with it, as difficult as it is. And there have been many times where I wish I had nothing to do with it, because it's just so time-consuming and so problematic and so complicated and totally out of my depth. And, you know, don't know the answer to that question someone's asked me. But at the same time, you know, overall, it's
I would imagine that feeling goes away fairly quickly.
Yeah, it does. And at the moment, we're in a good place where we've successfully, because COVID was tough.
Yeah.
Funding-wise, COVID was tough because, rightly, all the money got diverted to existing arts, existing buildings, existing practitioners and companies. All the Arts Council funding and all that stuff. Absolutely rightly so, but meant our new build, like, no one was interested.
Yeah.
And trying to raise money for it was really like pushing, I don't know, what's the expression? Something heavy up a hill.
Yeah.
But since the back of COVID, that kind of rush of enthusiasm has come back. We've had some successful funding, grants awarded, and people have donated money very generously in Stone as well, and named seats and become founding partners. We've had lots of local companies. We've had a local company donate all our domestic lighting and all the design.
Brilliant.
For that. We've had a local company fit and install our washrooms and bathrooms and stuff for nothing, sourced all materials cheaply for us. What else have we had? We've had loads of help from local companies. A kitchen was donated for nothing, all that stuff. So all that's flooded back in, and now it's a real pleasure because we're getting work done and we've got funding to just get the contractors in. And, and it's a bit of a drag. We have to get three quotes for everything. We have to make sure, because we're a charity, that everything's done by the letter. And properly. There's scrutiny on charities, and rightly so.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a lot of work, getting three quotes for everything and you know, all of that stuff. But it's great at the moment. And you can see visible progress. And, you know, maybe we can share some pictures somehow or whatever. But it's exciting at the moment. And
we can do
and
that.
And it is a privilege to be involved. And I can't lie and say that, you know, it's nice to think you would have been involved in something that's going to outlive you.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing. In the back of your mind. And when I think I'll allow myself a little moment when there's an applause at the end of the first thing that happens.
Like,
I think that would be great. But
sit back, relax, and enjoy it for a bit.
But it's local people. It's a charitable basis. There may be in the future that the operation can employ someone as a kind of theatre manager or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
That might happen in the future. But I guess as trustees, we just have to employ that person and kind of all of that stuff. But to begin with, it's all going to be volunteer powered.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's the way it stays.
Yeah. So how can people get involved, both from a donating point of view and as volunteers?
Yeah, we've got a lot of painting to do. We've just had about 400 or 500 square meters of plastering done. So you can imagine that's a lot of painting. So if people fancy...
You're in your scruffs now. Is that where you've been this morning?
I've been there this morning meeting someone who's... Because we've got our seating rate going in, which is lifts all the audience up on us. And he came and did a survey. So we went in and did some sweeping. The things you get involved with. But how do people get involved? There's lots of different ways. I mean, if you're an individual, you can volunteer with us. And I would just recommend going to our website. Hopefully there'll be a link attached to all the stuff. That's great. Just Google Crown Wharf Theatre. Can't miss us. And there's a way of getting involved. You can add yourself to our kind of volunteering list and stuff like that. And you can kind of indicate what you want to do. You might want to be help with front of house ushering when we open.
Yeah.
You might want to help on the technical side. You might want to help us do some painting.
Yeah.
Equally, if you're an individual or a family and you're interested in helping us financially, we have a sponsor a seat thing. It's 500 quid, but you get a family name on a plaque, or you can donate it to a loved one, or, you know, lots of different options. If you want to give us a fiver, we'll, you know, we've got a kind of a page for that, which will all be in the links. And then if you're a company or you're an organization, if you've got offers in kind that you think might help us, be that on the technical side or labor or you know, anything like that, that would be most welcome.
Yeah.
And then we also have a founding partner scheme, mainly for businesses.
Yeah.
We donate a sum of money and you can go on a founder's board and those sorts of things. And we've got, you know, a number of those in place already. So there's different ways and different levels depending on what you want to do.
Yeah.
But it's all on our website.
Yeah. What are some of the major expenses you've got now fitting out the theatre? What's the thing that you're dreading that's going to...
Well, we've got some big expenditure. We've just paid the bill for all that plasterboarding. And that was a stinger, but we had the money for it. We've got the money for our seating rake. That's a big investment.
Yeah.
We've got all our handrails and balustrades for the balcony. That's a big investment. Nice. The floor going down is massive. Mm. That's a huge sprint. We've not scrimped on it. It's going to be a sprung floor, so it's perfect for dance.
Yeah.
And you just 250 square meter floor, all timber and sprung and all of that. And the killer with that was that we got the quote a year ago, and with everything that's gone on, the price of timber's almost sort of doubled. And so our quote, you can imagine the amount of wood that is involved. So but that's all funded. That's going down in August and September. It'll really look like a theatre by the time you've got a floor and you're seating in.
Oh, yeah.
The big, big outstanding issue, which I've mentioned already, is the heating ventilation. And we've got our kind of broad design for that, but it's not fully funded.
Mm.
And if there's anyone out there who's either works in that industry or is interested in helping us fund that, then we'd love to hear from you. We've got a couple of grant funding bids that we find out about sort of October, November that would fund it, but by no means guaranteed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the big question mark, because we want to get that right. We want the temperature to be right in there. We want the air to be right in there before we open.
So, absolutely. Yeah. It needs to be a comfortable space for everyone.
Sure does.
I've noticed you've been very, very busy running lots of fundraising events to do with this as well. There's been like a takeover theatre in the bar a couple of times. I helped out at Wharfstock. Have you got anything coming up?
We've just done a load of events as well. We were selling beer at the Jubilee, which was great. We raised about 700 quid, but if it hadn't rained, because it poured on that, it was that big Sunday picnic thing.
Yeah.
If it hadn't rained, we probably would have raised a lot more. We've got a bunch of theatre tours happening across the summer.
Oh, great.
We want to hold a painting party, which is for volunteers to turn up, help us paint all this stuff.
Brilliant.
And we'll probably put on a barbecue and make a bit of a kind of social thing of it, which would be nice. But actually, we're being quite cautious with events now because we're not far away from operational stuff. We're not far away from first production, which is a big topic of conversation.
Sure.
What do we do? You know, what show is it and all of that. So we're just being quite cautious not to commit to too many events because we really want to focus on selecting our first production. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in-house. It's not going to be Stone Revelers. It's not going to be this. It's not going to be that. It's going to be a Crown Wharf production, probably, hopefully, of bringing different performers and actors and musicians and stuff together to form this kind of opening show for the theatre.
Yeah.
So
let me know if you want a bass player.
Yes, please. So, but the idea is it'd be nice to bring a mix of people together and it not just be one company. Or, do you know what I mean?
It's
a bit more of an open thing and bringing different people together to put on the theatre's first production.
Yeah.
But we want to invest a lot in that because we want it to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would be a shame to open with a bit of a raspberry. So
absolutely. And you're aiming for spring next year?
I think so. I think that's our realistic target at the moment. It's tricky because there's, you know, even with supply chain, you don't know how long things are going to take to arrive.
No, absolutely.
But I think that's very realistic. So, we haven't got as many events as we've done in the past just because we want to make sure all our resources are going into opening production, which is a great place to be.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There are literally billions and billions of podcasts out there. So the chances of finding intelligent life amongst them are so infinitesimally small as to not even be worth looking. Could you then have stumbled onto the one podcast where intelligent life could exist? No. No, you haven't.
I just want to, while we're here, throw a mention to Whispersmith Guitars. Chris Baxter, who was on a couple of episodes ago, has decided to start sponsoring us. So that's very kind of him. Thanks a lot for that. Chris is our only regular sponsor at the moment. So if anyone else wants to sponsor, please let us know. So you did start talking, Leo, about where you lived, but you didn't mention you lived in Toronto at some point. Do you want to expand on that a little bit for me? I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it was one of them, because you've asked me the question, and I guess it was, why did you go to Toronto? And the answer is, well, we just did. Yeah. So we were in a place, my wife and I, before we were married, and we were both working locally, living in Stone, and we just sort of decided we could, so we did.
Yeah.
And we went out there. Unfortunately, I was too old for a working visa. So I just had a full sabbatical off work, which was nice, and had 8 months. Wrote a play, haven't put it on yet, but I will.
Nice.
And then, but Harry, my other half, is in television production, and there's a lot of that in Toronto.
Yeah.
She was working and doing all sorts of weird and wonderful and interesting jobs while we were out there. But yeah, basically anything that you think is set in New York is probably filmed in Toronto.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So there's a lot of stuff going on there.
So for anyone who knows Toronto, or anyone who's listening in Toronto, because believe it or not, we do have a few Canadian listeners.
Oh, cool.
Whereabouts in Toronto?
We lived right near Trinity Bellwoods Park, which is like proper hipster part of town.
Nice.
It's an amazing, beautiful park. There's always loads of stuff going on there. And there's like lots of nice places to eat and drink. We sort of just put our finger on a map. We were like, where are we going to live? And we went on Airbnb and looked at long-term places, and we found this funny little basement apartment full of plants. Nice. Called the Zen Garden. That's what it was called.
Very nice.
And we based ourselves there. And I worked at the, I didn't work, but I volunteered at a local kind of food market. And the best I came back was like the odd loaf of bread and stuff that they donated at the end of the day, which is nice.
But
And we traveled all around Canada. We went over to the west coast of Vancouver, and we did the Icefield Parkway Drive, which was incredible. Yeah. Life-changing stuff. And then came back and then did some grown-up stuff like marriage and kids and things like that. So
what is it you do now, if you don't mind talking about yourself?
I don't mind too much. No, I'm a health and wellbeing manager.
Yeah.
I currently work for a company called Mace, who a large construction company.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't managed to leverage any of that expertise into the theatre projects. I'm a bit too new yet. It would have been nice to sort of take advantage, because it's just the sort of thing they could do. But maybe I'll try and pull some strings at some point when I've got my feet under the table. But and that's really looking at health, safety and well-being of people that work for Mace, which is a lot of people across the globe, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, my background, I've been in workplace health and well-being, and I originally worked in public health in Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent before that.
Okay, so how did you get into that? What's your background?
It's interesting. You know that bit where I was living in Yarnfield?
Yes.
Well, at about the same time as that, when I moved here, it was just like get any job post-uni.
Yeah, absolutely.
I ended up working in a bank, which wasn't the best 18 months of my life.
No,
then I got a job with Staffordshire Fire and Rescue. Now, bear with me.
Yeah.
In kind of road and fire safety.
Okay.
And I did a lot of kind of stuff in schools and went into people's homes and stuff in businesses about reducing the risk of fire and road accidents. And that
always
then,
the performer.
Quite a lot of that, actually. yeah, quite a lot of that. And then that got me a job, with New Zealand Fire Service. I went over there for a while because I got family there.
Wow.
So I worked with New Zealand Fire Service doing fire safety and working with all sorts of weird and wonderful communities in Auckland.
Brilliant.
And then I got a job with the NHS when I came back in Newcastle, under Lyme. all around kind of public health engagement and public health campaigns and health check promotion and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then that got me a job in public health for Staffordshire County Council,
yeah.
where I specialised in workplace health.
Nice.
And I did workplace health for about 6-7 years there.
Yeah.
Then I, let's not get political, but things got a bit grim in local authority in terms of...
Yes.
Yeah, that's.
I used to work for Stoke City Council, so.
Okay, so you might have experienced the same thing that I did, is how, yeah, things went downhill in terms of what local authorities could do and what we ended up having to do, which was rather than deliver stuff, was cut stuff, and I couldn't deal with that. So I was fortunate. I made a switch into kind of corporate world, doing workplace health and wellbeing for an organisation rather than lots and lots of people.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah, now I used to work for the youth service and that got cut.
Yeah, that's not there anymore. Yeah. Who needs that?
I used to work for adult learning for Stoke. That got cut.
Who needs that? Yeah, exactly. Who needs drug and alcohol
services? Who needs to educate out of work people? You know, God,
I could do another hour on this.
Absolutely. Climb to fame, climb to fame. It's your chance to drop a name. Trying to outdo each other's coin of lame. One-upmanship is the only aim. Claim to fame, claim to fame, claim to fame, claim to fame. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's that time, unfortunately, Leo, where I have to ask you, if you have a claim to fame, you've been involved in theatre. I mean, you've got to have, surely there's got to be something in there.
I guess so. I'm going to go for an obscure one, which is let's think, maybe when I was about 12, 13, my dad had this thing in the house we grew up in, and it was called his Sunday Club.
Right.
It was basically before the pubs opened.
Oh, okay.
He had like a weird bunch of kind of pirate mates that came over every Sunday morning, and he would be cooking Sunday lunch or preparing Sunday lunch whilst they were all drinking cider or wine. And, you know, they all had nicknames like Frank the Dolphin and One Thumb Trev and Shaky Owl. And then there was...
no one knows how One Thumb Trev lost his
believe
thumb.
It or not, he fell under a train. And But, I'd say that was lucky, really.
Yeah.
believe
I mean,
or not.
But, that's good because Frank was a dolphin, which was a much bigger disability in London.
Yeah, it was tricky.
Yeah.
But one of the gang that came around was a guy called Ian Cowan, who's an artist. A huge beard, like literally massive before it.
Pre-hipster,
before beards were cool.
Nice.
And he is the only human face to appear in the Beatles' Yellow Submarine video. It floats up in a bubble. And there's like a lot of internet-based conjecture about who is this a human face in Yellow Submarine? And he's an animator and he worked on it.
Fabulous.
And yeah, I used to sit there, play dominoes with him.
Brilliant.
And he used to let me win like 2p's off him. I think he let me anyway.
That is a really good one.
It is pretty cool. And he once drew like a birthday card for my dad.
Yeah.
And it was all very kind of surreal, absurd stuff. And it's a picture of himself blowing an elephant's trunk. And then happy birthday, Kimon, which is my dad's name, coming out of the elephant's bum. So it's this kind of fun stuff. And we've still got that somewhere. But
that's amazing.
Yeah, I'd say it's a claim to fame.
Yeah. So what was your dad's name?
My dad's name is Kimon.
Kimon.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And your surname that I still can't pronounce.
Yeah.
So is that Greek?
It is Greek. Exactly right. And you remember I said I wrote a play while I was in Canada?
Yes.
Well, I wrote a play about how this all happened. So my granddad, my dad's dad, was already in the UK. And what happened was the BBC set up the BBC World Service during the Second World War.
Fantastic, yeah.
And they turned all the director generals and all the top people's offices into little studios.
Yeah.
And I've read a whole kind of book about it, but they had like the Greek section, and then they had the Swedish section, and then they had the Arabic section, and then they had the German section and all this stuff. And we broadcast in all these different languages. And they just threw people into it, you know. So you're a lawyer and you can speak Greek, so you're going to broadcast and you're going to be, do you know what I mean? They weren't broadcasters.
Absolutely.
And they had to learn how to do all of this.
Yeah.
And had all these sort of temporary studios set up. And so my granddad ended up being in London permanently to do this World Service stuff and broadcasting to Greece during the Second World War.
Yeah.
He met a Scottish lady. They got married, lived in London. My dad was born here.
Brilliant.
And then they ended up moving up to Edinburgh, which is the Athens of the North.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty cool story. And yeah, so my dad was born a Cockney, as he said, but with a Scottish mum and a Greek father. So it's an interesting mix.
And worked around the BBC, and then you moved to Edinburgh and the Fringe. So it's all, you were always going to be in theatre, weren't you?
Quite possibly. Well, my granddad was my grandfather who did the broadcast. He was in a lot of films. And I went to, my wife took me to the BFI in London, where I could watch a film called Shrine of Victory.
Right.
And it was all about the war in Crete, and my granddad was in it as a kind of principal character. And yeah, it's really cool. Like, he did like Ealing Studio stuff.
Brilliant.
So it was interesting. Stuff. And my mum and dad met in a play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always been in the blood, that's for sure.
You see, so that's like a secondary claim to fame there. You've got two in there.
Yeah,
I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, the BFI is amazing. Have you been up to Bradford to the National Film Theatre as well and seen the BFI archive up there?
No, I haven't.
They've got the whole lot on big. It used to be videotapes, but it's all on servers now and you can watch. Oh, anything you want. I watched the very first pilot for Doctor Who. I don't know why. It's just
why wouldn't you?
What I found while I was up.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
While I was up there, but
what happened?
Well, there's a Time Lord.
Oh yeah.
It was quite dark, actually. I was quite surprised at how William Hartnell and that, and how it was a lot more sinister.
Oh, really?
Than it is now. He was quite a mysterious character, you know, quite dark, and I mean, the aliens were quite bad.
Good,
but the premise and the story in that, I was quite surprised how good it was. Really,
I actually didn't know that was there in Bradford. I had no idea. I didn't.
Oh yeah, it's now called the National Science and Media Museum, but it used to be called National Film, TV, and Radio Museum. Or something like that. And it's a massive, it's opposite the Alhambra Theatre in Bradford, and it's a big 6-story high building with a huge IMAX theatre. It's got an IMAX theatre, it's got the Cubby Broccoli Theatre, and I think a Francis Ford Coppola. So there's 3 cinemas in there, but one is 4 stories high, obviously.
Worth a visit,
it's, then. It is, and on the top floor is the archive of all the old films and stuff. So, you might be able to find some other examples.
Oh, who knows? Yeah.
Bits and pieces in there. Pants or boxers?
Boxers.
Boxers.
Yeah, boxers.
Justification?
It's surely it's just a comfort thing, right? I can't think of any other reason why you'd choose pants or boxers.
Yeah. You see, when I had Jamie on, this is an interesting point. I was very much boxers, and he was very much, well, it depends. What?
Yeah, I think
I'm going on a long walk. All right, okay.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think chafing becomes more of a thing as time goes on.
And support as you get older as well. Yeah, I mean, you're very young. How old are you?
I'm 40 in February.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You're wearing well. Excellent.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out. Yeah. For the first time ever, really, I want a party. I've never really fancied a party for my own birthday.
Yeah.
But
do it.
I think this time I've...
What are you thinking?
Do you know what? I remember my mum's 40th.
Yeah.
And she had it at the house, and I was supposed to be in bed. But I crept down, and what she did, she had all her friends over, and there was like this optional do a thing. Did someone play a song? You had someone who'd written like a kind of Bob Dylan-y rhapsody type thing in the 60s, and it was all like Right On Man sort of stuff. But he sort of did that. And there was a Scottish friend of theirs who did like a, I think it's like a dagger dance or something, like a sword dance. It's like this Scottish thing. Yeah, just people doing a bit. And, you know, someone who... Yeah, someone else played guitar and someone else written a poem and all that sort of stuff. And they just sort of shared a bit.
Are you sure with all this travel that your family weren't really circus entertainers?
Circus is quite accurate when I think about family quite a lot. But yeah, I'd like to do a kind of almost an open mic thing where people, if they want to do something, they can. If they don't, they don't have to.
Yeah.
And just have some stuff set up so people can.
Are you going to do this up at the wharf?
Well, I was thinking about doing it up the wharf, but I also want to do food and I'm just, you know, I don't want to do it. So, you know.
That sounds great. That sounds
really good. I think so. I think it might work up there. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think I've got a few, as you can imagine, I've got a few friends who don't mind standing up and showing off a bit. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
It'd be nice,
I think I've interviewed half of them.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. But yeah, so that would be nice. I'm sure I'd like it if someone did a sketch or something. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah,
so,
definitely. Yeah. So some stand-up,
or
some
it'll
music,
be really awkward and awful. But either way, people remember it. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's it.
Or no one stands
and
up.
When is your birthday? When is it?
It's February, early February. Okay. So there's a bit of time for people to think about it.
So, Mike, if you're lucky, theatre might just be ready.
Maybe. But I don't, again, it's like that. I couldn't just have my party in the theatre because, do you know what I mean? It's not mine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's just mine to use and abuse as much as I'd like to. So I'd probably have to hire it if I wanted to use it. So.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Leo. I will put all of the links to Cranwharf in the episode description and that. If anyone wants to get involved in volunteering, please do get in touch through the links. And was there anything else you wanted to say?
No, only to encourage people. I mean, I like I've sort of said all the way through, being involved with, getting involved with Stone Revelers as a theatre company built my whole life around that, really. And yeah, you do shows together and that's all good, but like, it's that ability to then, if you need someone to help you move a washing machine on a Saturday morning, you've got someone to call and help you do that and help life rub along a little bit easier than otherwise. And I think if you want to come and get involved, I think Cranwharf will be this whole community you can get involved with and make friends, be part of something that's, you know, for everyone's benefit. And, you know, if you need help moving a washing machine, I'm sure there'll be someone to call, you know. And that's the whole idea of it. And then what you'll have is people meeting people and getting involved with cross-pollination or some less sort of slightly highbrow term, but people just mixing up, you know, what they do and making new contacts and all that stuff. And who knows, you know, who knows.
I think other projects will definitely come off the back of it. You know, I think it's just, it's getting the theatre finished and getting the theatre up and running isn't an end. I think it's a start.
Yeah, well, that's slightly terrifying because, as I've hopefully described, it's been a massive journey just to get to the point where it's open, and then you've got to run it, and that's like, oh, that's going to just be forever.
Yeah.
And we've got to make it work. It's got to pay its own way. And then all new projects will be born out of it and all of that stuff. But it's kind of that ethos of, and you know, you've got to sell tickets. And, you know, we recently had a comedy night and that sold out. Great. Revelers recent production sold out, so we're confident there's market. And then, you know, we've got a hope that if you build it, they will come, sort of thing.
Let's hope so.
Field of Dreams type stuff.
I think it's a great project. I wish you best of luck, and thanks for joining me today. And hope to have you on again sometime. Maybe you could come back and talk to us when it's up and running.
Maybe we could do like a live kind of
tie-in. That would be nice.
And do something down there.
Yeah, do a live tie-in. I'll certainly come down and grab some sound bites and stuff and
very welcome, as will everyone.
Thanks a lot for today, Leo. It's been great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Listening to A Couple of Drips. The show was conceived and presented by Chris Granger and is a Cup the Mic production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, Chris here. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the production of future episodes, then subscriptions are available. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. See you next time.